It's Monday night.
I've been in the game a long time. When a catcher catches a ball and it's strike three, you call the guy out. It's that simple, isn't it?
And if it's Monday, it's the knee jerks.
I'm not going to sit here and rip umpires, but you saw what you saw, clearly saw what you saw. I just saw it for the 10th time. Write it and say something once in a while. Have the nerve to say something.
Detroit Sports Talk with Attitude.
Attitude, OD! 1, 2, 3!
Attitude!
Coming up tonight, will Big Al guess whose birthday it is? Who are the jerks of the week? What will Eno rant about now? The answers coming up next. Two guys who know Detroit sports, the voice of reason, Greg Eno and Big Al Beaton.
It's Monday, June 23rd, 2014. That means it's time for the Knee Jerks, Detroit Sports Talk with Eno and Big Al. I'm the Big Al of the equation, Al Beaton. I'm co-managing editor, BlessYouBoys.com, SB Nation's Detroit Tigers blog. Every week I get together with a man I call. Well, I have numerous names for him, but I think my favorite is the man who knows a lot of things about a lot of things. That's Greg Eno of GregEno.com, of BlessYouBoys, where he's a contributor. He has his own Red Wings blog, and he's got his fingers in several internet pies, and that would be, well, Greg, how's things?
Not one of those pies is humble pie, unfortunately. I'm doing well, Al, thank you. We took last week off. We're back after a one-week hiatus, and it's good to be back. I am Greg Eno from GregEno.com. That's where you can read me. Also, check me out on Twitter, at Greg Eno, and check the Knee Jerks out on Twitter, at The Knee Jerks. Our Facebook fan page is Facebook.com/TheKneeJerks, and our blog is TheKneeJerks.us. So that's how you can keep track of what's going on with the program. And I will tell you that tonight we're excited because we have a special guest that's going to be joining us in a matter of minutes, Travis Bader, who this past winter set a new all-time NCAA record for career three-pointers, breaking that of Duke's J.J. Redick. And Travis has since graduated from Oakland University, and he is has been working out for a number of NBA teams in advance of this Thursday's NBA draft. So we'll be talking to Travis about that, about his prospects of making an NBA club, what he might do if he doesn't latch on with an NBA team, and we'll talk about, of course, the three-point record and a bunch of other things with Adam Vickers, our resident college sports guy. Adam's here for an edition of Adam Rants, but he is also here to join us for the Travis Bader interview, so we're excited about that as well. Al, you've got some things going on, of course, about the Tigers and about the World Cup and things of that nature, but before we do any of that, before we do Travis, before we do what's on Al's agenda, it's time to play a game we like to call Whose Birthday Is It, Maestro?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
You all know how we play this game by now. I give Al a clue or two or three of an individual whose birthday it is today in the world of sports. If Al correctly guesses that individual within the first two clues, he will receive an extra large tube of Brill Cream.
Brill Cream,
a little dab will do you.
Indeed.
A little dab will do you, but you're going to get an extra large tube if you guess this person. I'm kind of cheating here. I will be transparent. Normally these people are... Their birthdays fall on the day that the show debuts, which is always on Monday, June 23rd. But as you know, we record the show on Sundays, and I'm cheating this time. I didn't like the people whose birthday it is on the 23rd, so I'm cheating and giving you a person whose birthday it is today, June 22nd, as we tape this. This person, Al, was made his name in the NBA, in professional basketball. He... was a member, it turns out, after his career was over, he became a member of the 50th anniversary All-NBA team. He was a 10-time NBA All-Star, was the 14th overall pick in the 1983 draft, and his uniform number is retired by not only the school he played for, but also the only two NBA teams that he played for.
That's first 1983, gosh. Probably should be right in the wheelhouse, but it's I'm going to need another clue on this one, so we'll just have to hold off. All right, with that, guys, let's move on to our guest.
Al, I don't know if any basketball player from Oakland University has ever made it in the NBA, and I have to do some research on that, but I have a feeling that our guest might be, if he isn't going to be the first, he's going to be the second. Let's put it that way. Travis Bader is on the other end of our line. He is a recent graduate of Oakland University, which I have a very fondness for because my daughter attends OU right now, so of course I'm a little bit biased toward the Grizzlies, but I'm also biased toward players who set NCAA records, and that's what Travis Bader did last winter. He broke J.J. Redick's all-time record for three-point shots made in the NCAA realm, and he takes that resume along with the rest of his skills to the NBA draft this week, which happens on Thursday, and he's been working out for a number of NBA teams in advance of the draft. Travis, thanks for being here. We're happy that you're with us tonight. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, guys.
Travis, I want to talk about, obviously, this is a big week for you. This is leading up to the culmination of a lot of hard work, a lot of trips around the country, literally around the country, working out for various NBA teams. It's been kind of whirlwind for you. Kind of talk us through or take us through the teams that you've been working out for and how this whole process has gone for you since graduating from OU.
Yeah, it's been exciting. It's been different, something I'm not used to, but, it's fun. You get to travel around the country. You get to, see what the NBA lifestyle or professional lifestyle is kind of like and just traveling and meeting different people. And, you're working out for NBA coaches, GMs, scouts, and, that's been a dream ever since I was a little kid to, kind of have the opportunity to be in front of those kind of guys and, show them what I got. So, that's exactly what it is. You're just trying to show your skills and then hopefully, all you need is one team to really like you. So, I just got to Boston, so I have a workout with the Celtics tomorrow. And, this will be my 10th workout. I've worked out with the Knicks, Warriors, Clippers, Kings, Jazz, and then a couple more, so I'm drawing blanks. It's been fun right now.
What about the Pistons? Are you working out for them at all or no?
Yes. Actually, after the workout with the Celtics, I take off and head to Detroit and work out with the Pistons on the 24th.
Wonderful.
So that should be fun. That should be my last workout before the draft. No better way than to end it kind of 2 minutes from Oakland University.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how do these workouts kind of describe these for us, for those who may not know? I mean, are these individual workouts? Are you by yourself working out for these teams? Are you among a group of players who are working out?
It's a group of players. Every workout I've been to, it's been six guys usually. Maybe there's a workout where it's about four guys, but usually it's six guys, and it's, they put you through testing just like you see in the combine. Measurements of height, weight, reach, wingspan, and then the athletic testing. And then, you get into some drills, shooting drills, ball handling, and a lot of one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three, just so they can see you compete, and then maybe finish up with some more shots. It's just they just want to see what you got. They want to see your testing and just, how you compete.
Are they conducting any one-on-one personal interviews with you a la the combine? Were they taking you away from the court and asking you maybe questions about your character and about you, your personality? Is that involved in the process as well?
Definitely. Different teams will depend if they want to interview you and, you kind of just sit down and just talk with, the GMs, the coaches, the scouts, just everybody, and they pick your brain for a little bit. They want to know, what your character's like, and that's one of the most important things, honestly, that I think, these scouts have been watching, and throughout the whole season they have film, and, they know how each person plays, but honestly, I think that this process and these workouts are a great opportunity for them to kind of get to know the prospects and see if they're of high character or not.
We're talking with Travis Bader, a recent graduate of Oakland University, who is in the middle of working out for a bunch of NBA teams in advance of this week's NBA draft. Listen to the Knee Jerks. I'm Greg Eno from GregEno.com. Big Al from BlessYouBoys.com. And Adam Biggers, of course, is with us as well. And let's bring Adam in. What you got for Travis Bader?
Well, Travis, the obvious question, I guess, for me is the scouts know what, like you said, they kind of know what guys can do. They have film. They're aware that you're the leader in three-pointers made, and it's more of a question of character. I'm always curious to know, I mean, we've heard some really oddball questions from not only, you know, the NBA, but basically from all the sports as far as the interviewing. What's kind of like the most personal or oddest question that they're asking right now? Because I think Stauskas the other day said something like he was asked him about Justin Bieber. And I guess I just want to know what your most interesting and kind of intrusive or just oddball questions that they're asking.
I haven't gotten any Justin Bieber questions, but none of those. But, you know, a lot of it for me has just been kind of about my background. They kind of just want to hear, you know, what I have to say about my family, about my upbringing, how what I think I would do in the league. You know, I have had a question. One question was, what does 2 and 2 mean to you? So, you know, that was maybe the oddest question I got.
How did you answer that?
I said 4. They want to hear your first response, and they said, well, what does 2 and 2 mean? So I said 4.
Okay.
One connection would have also been acceptable.
Yeah, so there was that one, and then there was a question that was like, who would you want to be at a dinner with if you could pick, you know, like 3 celebrities?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a different question that I only got at one place. And, kind
and
of
what did you?
And
which 3 celebrity? Which 3 celebrities did you say?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I know Michael Jordan was in there.
Okay.
I think I went Bill Gates just to sound smart. And
okay.
I probably threw in a pretty actress too. Just, you know, you got to have, you know, a couple ugly guys, so you got to throw in a pretty woman.
Travis Bader is our guest here on the Knee Jerks. We're talking about his workouts and his chances at the NBA draft. When did you, Travis, start to think about, obviously at Oakland, which is a pretty, you know, it's a pretty successful program with Coach Camp. I mean, you guys are, you know, usually in the mix in there. I know you switched to the Horizon League this year, correct? Is that
this
is your first year? Yeah. So although you didn't have the kind of year I know that you're typically used to having at Oakland in your senior year, but for the most part, that program is usually pretty darn competitive. But when did you individually first start to think about the NBA? I mean, as your senior year was winding down, I mean, when did you first start to think, or maybe it was even before your senior year, that you might have some NBA aspirations?
I mean, honestly, you know, it's always been in my head. It's always been something I've wanted to do, just like, you know, most people playing a sport when they're younger. They want to be a professional at that sport. But, you know, I think, you know, when I was in college and I started my freshman year and, you know, I got a great opportunity and stepped up my first game of my college career against West Virginia and had 15 points. And, you know, from then in the back of my mind, it was always, you know, I seriously think I can be a professional basketball player. And, you know, it only grew as my career at Oakland progressed. And, you know, I think even my sophomore, junior year is when it got really strong. And, you know, I was starting to put up some pretty good numbers. And, you know, I just thought from there that, you know, this could really happen and this could, you know, be a serious thing. And, you know, I'm just blessed to have the career that I had and the opportunities I've, you know, got coming my way right now.
Well, the way the game is played right now in the NBA, you can never have too many shooters. I mean, and fans of the Pistons will definitely agree with me on that, because that's one of the many areas that the Pistons were lacking last year and the last several years has been that solid, reliable outside shot. So in the NBA, the way the game is played now, it's played so much around the three-point line. So anyone who has that acumen, obviously, is going to have a place in the NBA. But aside from the outside shooting, which we all know, like Adam mentioned earlier about, you know, everybody knows what you can do on film. They've seen you play. But aside from the outside shot, as important as that is, obviously you can't survive in the NBA on that alone. So what else do you feel you bring to the table that would make you attractive to an NBA team?
I think, you know, it just starts with, you know, my work ethic. Just in terms of practice, being the guy who's going to bring it every day and push guys. And, you know, I'm not an eye guy, you know, I'm all about the team. And, so I definitely think that's a positive I would bring. You know, just to keep in line with shooting, my free throw shooting is, you know, pretty good. I think I shot 94% last year. And, mm-hmm. so obviously I think that's a valuable weapon to have to be able to knock down
sure.
free throws. And, you know, I've just been really working hard on my defense. Just, that's been a big question. Is can I defend? So I've just been trying to show in these workouts that, you know, I can defend a 1-2 guard, maybe even a 3, and just been really working on my 1-2 dribble pull-up.
We're talking with Travis Bader of Oakland University, who is getting ready for to hopefully have his name called at this week's NBA draft, or if not, he hopes, of course, to latch onto a club as an undrafted free agent. I'm Greg Eno from GregEno.com. Big Al, Al Beaton is here as well, but let's get back to Adam Biggers. Adam, what you got for Travis Bader?
Well, while you guys were talking a little bit there, I pulled up the list, and I'm looking at it because as far as just being known as a three-point shooter, and Greg, I think you made a good point, and Travis says, you know, he's well aware of that too. There's not a whole lot of recognizable names or as far as guys other than Stephen Curry, just off the top of my head, that are you know, making an impact in the league. So I wanted to ask Travis, I mean, just, you touched on it a little bit, but how important is it for you to prove that you're more than just a three-point shooter? And I guess right now, what is your specific, I mean, you mentioned defense. Is there anything specific that you're working on defensively to get better, rather just defending in general, something maybe specific that you're doing?
Yeah. You know, I think in these workouts, I am trying to show, you know, that I do have more besides just shooting. But at the same time, I think being able to put the ball in the hole is a very valuable weapon. That's what the game's all about, is, you know, putting the ball in the hole and stopping the other team from putting the ball in the hole. So, you know, I'm trying to just really show teams that I'm a knockdown shooter and I'm somebody, you know, you would love to have on your team and in the corner for a superstar to kind of kick it to if they're getting doubled or something. But, you know, I have been working on everything else and really just trying to show I can defend, and specifically, you know, just showing I can defend multiple positions. You know, I can chase guys, chase two guards off of down screens and curls. Also just showing, you know, team defense-wise that, you know, I'm out there, I'm talking, and I understand rotations, and I understand team defense rather than just one-on-one defense. I think that's a very important part. Especially, you know, you saw in the NBA Finals with the Spurs and their ball movement, and, you know, Miami
yeah.
really had to, you know, lock in on team defense and just be able to talk and know their rotation. So I definitely think that's a big part and something that you want to show these NBA guys.
You know, I know that in these workouts – go ahead, Adam, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I would say, obviously, you're looking to get drafted, period. I mean, that's the goal for every guy, or signed. Have you thought maybe a little bit about situations, or maybe I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but would you say, given the scenario, if you're given the opportunity with a team that's not a contender and they say, look, we like what you do, they're going to throw you in the fire and you're going to take your licks. Would you rather have it that way, or would you rather maybe go to a team that's a little more solid? You may not play as much, but you're going to be around some guys maybe that you could learn from. Learn from. Would you like the trial by fire thing, or maybe a little bit of time to learn in the league?
Honestly, I would just love to be on the NBA team, and you know, whatever they decide my role is, whether if I'm on a strong contending team for a championship, and you know, they have a couple of guys ahead of me. I think, like I brought up earlier, I would be a great practice player, somebody who's always prepared, somebody who's always ready, just in case something happens. And you know, I do get thrown in there, and I think I could have an impact. But at the same time, you know, if I went to a team and you know, I was just, you know, kind of out there, and they had the confidence and wanted to see what I had. Like I said, I would be prepared for that as well. But, you know, right now I'm not getting too picky. You know, we got the draft coming up, and I'm just going through these workouts and just really working my butt off, and whatever happens, happens, and I'll just be blessed, you know, either way.
That was a great question that Adam had, because even though you don't, of course, you don't have necessarily your choice of scenarios, those are indeed probably the two scenarios that is going to, you know, face you if you are fortunate enough to be in the NBA. I want to ask you, though, you know, we talk a lot about you trying to impress these scouts and these GMs and these coaches, what have you, but, you know, it's kind of a two-way street as well. I mean, have any teams so far, Travis, that you've worked out for, do any stand out to you as maybe teams that impressed you? I mean, you know, let's face it, you're trying to impress them, but were there any teams that kind of left you with the feeling of, boy, I sure like to play for those guys?
You know, honestly, every single team I've been to, it's, you know, it's been crazy. It's been, you know, they take care of you, and they put you in a nice hotel, and they, you know, you have this, your stipend for your foods, and
right.
they're all just very impressive, especially when they speak to you, and you know, it's nerve wracking, but they're at the same time, everybody's, you know, just really friendly. So I can't really pinpoint a certain team, you know, where I've just kind of focused on and said, wow, that team's really impressed me. Honestly, I just think it's been every single team, and then yeah.
Very diplomatic answer to a question, but I can understand what you're talking about. It's all new to you. You're starry-eyed, and I can see where not one would necessarily, you know, be head and shoulders over the other. Let's dial it back a little bit. We're talking with Travis Bader of Oakland University, who's getting ready for the NBA draft. Let's dial it back though a little bit, Travis, and talk about Oakland University. The experience there, we touched on it very briefly, but I want to go back to Coach Campy set. I think one is 500th game while you were there, 500th game all over Oakland. I wrote a piece about him this past year, you know, about the job that he's done over there. He's flying under the radar, but, you know, he always has that program, seems like, you know, at an elite status for the level of competition that he's playing. He's never afraid to play the big boys. You've played some of the best teams in the country since you've played for Coach Campy. Talk about Coach Campy and talk about your experience at Oakland University overall.
Well, Coach Campy, you know, he's been an unbelievable person in my life. You know, he basically, you know, gave me my only Division I scholarship offer, and he saw something in me that not many people did. So, you know, he kind of opened the doors and got it started for me, and you know, it's been amazing just to be coached by him, just kind of learn from him and be around him every day. You know, he's a very, very honest guy, and what he tells you is what he means. You know, he's an intense guy when you're out there on the court, but as soon as something happens, you know, you can go over there and you can talk with him, and he's going to tell you how he feels. He's not going to hold any grudges against you. So, you know, he's a great coach. He's always, you know, he has Oakland going in the right direction. You know, I think he's shown he's been very successful. And, you know, he loves playing those bigger schools, which is, you know, honestly, probably what gets, a lot of recruits because, you know, for me, it wasn't a matter of playing bigger schools, you know, got me to Oakland University.
Like I said, you guys were always playing, it seemed like, especially before the league schedule started, as far as the non-conference schedule goes, you know, you played the Ohio States, you played the Michigans, you played the Michigan States. In fact, you gave Michigan State quite a battle at the Palace, did you not, this past year?
Yeah. You know, we've always kind of competed with Michigan State. I think my sophomore year, we lost by one at the Palace. This past year, you know, we're right there with them the whole game. I think ended up losing by a little under 10. So, you know, he definitely, you know, he prepares us that way just for conference time, just prepares us by going up against these elite schools and elite talent. And, you know, it really tests us physically, mentally. It's something fun, you know, that we get to experience just by going to all these places. But at the same time, I think in the past couple of years,
Kind really things to say about you after that last game against Michigan State.
It's almost a
talk about Coach Izzo and
some of these games.
Coach Izzo, No, I'm sorry. I think you broke up for a second, so I may have stepped on your answer. I apologize. Coach Izzo had some very kind things to say about you, Travis, after the Michigan State game this past year at the Palace. And there's a connection between you and Coach Izzo and your father with Michigan State. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, my father was director of basketball operations under Coach Izzo. And, you know, so growing up, Coach Izzo was unbelievable to me. He let me come to every practice. He let me, you know, I was in the Michigan State gym just shooting every single day and getting shots up on the gun, talking to the players, you know, traveling to Sweet 16s. So I have a special relationship with Coach Izzo. You know, so it was just unbelievable playing him my college career, going up against Coach Izzo and the Spartans just because I grew up around that program. You know, and a lot of people ask me, you know, how did Coach Izzo let you get away? And, I think that's just always a funny question because I was 160 pounds, 6 foot, you know, 2.5 coming out my senior year. So, you know, I don't blame him at all. It was, I wasn't very impressive looking. So, you know, me and Coach Izzo have a great relationship. I know that he would do anything for me just like I would do anything for him. And, you know, like I said, it's been fun playing against him and his, that program the past couple of years.
Good stuff. Well, before we let Travis go, let's put Adam Biggers in for one more question. What you got for Travis?
Well, Travis, I think it's a great thing right now, especially for the state of Michigan as far as basketball is concerned. I mean, you look right now, you have you know, a couple guys, Payne and Gary Harris, coming from Michigan State. You know, maybe Keith Appling gets a shot in the late round, or maybe he goes the undrafted free agent route. Then you look Glenn Robinson the third and South gets out of Michigan, and then you throw yourself in there. I think overall, if you just look at the, you know, the air quote it here, the state's draft class, you know, I think there's some great skill there. Have you ever took the time to kind of look and see the guys that you're entering the draft with and step back and kind of, you know, have some respect for where you're at among them and kind of where they're at among the rest of the nation?
Yeah, you know, I've been out in L.A. training, actually, this, you know, the month of May, and I was out there with Gary Harris, and I was training with Glenn Robinson was out there. James Young was out there, and, you know, he didn't go to a school in Michigan, but he, you know, grew up in Michigan and went to Rochester High. And, so, yeah, so I've been around, you know, these guys for a while, and, you know, we're all friends, and it's been fun competing against them, and, you know, even a guy like Shane Whittington from Western Michigan who broke his leg but had an unbelievable Portsmouth tournament. And, you know, he was being talked about high, maybe even getting drafted. And, you know, unfortunately he broke his leg, but I just think it just shows the talent that's in the state of Michigan. And it's spread out. You know, it's at Michigan State, it's at Michigan, Oakland, Western Michigan. So, you know, it's unbelievable. It is something that's good for the state. And it's just fun to kind of, you know, been going up against these guys through this my college career, and just to see everybody being successful and making these strides to the NBA is amazing.
Let's before we let you go, Travis, just kind of take us through the process here. The draft is Thursday. The draft, of course, is only two rounds in the NBA. What's the game plan here? If you don't get drafted, what are your people going to be doing? Are you contacting are you reaching out to NBA clubs? Do they reach out to you? How does that whole thing work?
Yeah, you know, I'll be talking to my agent all the draft night. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not 3 days long like the NFL. But,
yeah.
You know, it's you know, it'll be fun. It'll be fun to kind of – I grew up watching this and always dreamed about being in this. So, you know, if my name gets called, that'll be unbelievable and show the hard work paid off and, you know, a lot more hard work to come. But at the same time, you know, if I don't get drafted, I understand it's – you know, I'll have teams calling for summer league, and, you know, that's something I'll talk with my agent about and figure out, you know, where the best place for me to kind of, play summer league is and who's showing strong interest and who needs shooters. And, so, you know, either way, if I get drafted or don't, it's, you know, it's the beginning of, hopefully, a long, basketball career.
Absolutely, that is the goal, of course, and we wish you nothing but, success, and we hope that when you become second team NBA All-Star, you remember us, okay?
Yes, sir.
Travis Fader has been our guest. He's just graduated from Oakland University and watched the NBA draft on Thursday, and if his name is called, it'll be a great thing. And as Travis said, if it's not a call, that's okay too, because that's not certainly not the end of the line when it comes to this young man and his basketball career. Travis, thanks again for joining us, and we appreciate you doing this, and good luck to you, my friend.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Sure. Travis Painter of Oakland University. You're listening to the Knee Jerks. I'm Greg Eno from GregEno.com. Big Al Beaton from BlessYouBoys.com, and Adam Biggers from Too Many Places to Mention is with us as well. Adam, what did you think of Travis? He sounds like a pretty pretty put together young man.
Yeah, and you know what? I took the time to notice that. As far as just interviewing people, you could tell that he's been through college. He's got the up to the senior status. You see a big difference, I think, sometimes, from the younger guys to the older guys. But I pay attention to that. And when I've, spoken with recruits, too, I mean, I think a guy with talent who has some humility, is well-spoken, and just kind of knows how to say what he needs to say is valuable. I mean, because let's face it, a lot of teams, you might be an insanely talented guy, but at the same time, you might be prone to flapping at the mouth. In this day and age, all it takes is some, a little bit of ignorance on Twitter and you're a superstar, you're infamous for a day.
Right.
So, I think that that's probably going to be something that teams look at. I mean, they know Travis can shoot the ball. He can do some other things. He says he's working, defensively. But at the same time, is Travis Bader going to be a guy who's, in the gutter one night and says, makes a ill-advised joke or criticizes a teammate? Is he going to be a guy who rocks the boat? No, I think he sounds like a guy who's going to add to a locker room. And those kind of guys are important. And I think that he knows his role. He knows that he's got a challenge. He wouldn't mind being a practice player. And I think that says a lot about a guy, because it'd be easy for him to have the chip on his shoulder and, which I'm sure he probably has a little bit of, but his focus isn't going to necessarily for personal gain to prove people wrong. He wants to prove people wrong that he can fit into a team. He sounds, like a guy who wants to fit into a system, not a guy who wants to be, Travis Bader, let's say. So, I was impressed. I thought that he's got a good grasp on it. And for all the traveling and the dates he's having with all these teams, he's definitely going through it, and for him to be able to kind of give us that insight, I think was a good thing, because it's funny. It's not easy, and I can't imagine having to face one team. I'm flying from the West Coast with jet lag, got to go to the East Coast, and give these guys my best when I'm running on low energy. I mean, that is taxing in itself.
Yep, absolutely. I think it's also a good reflection on Coach Campy and his program to produce a player of Travis's skill and character. Well, let's get back to Adam Biggers here. He's also here for Adam Rants, and as everyone knows, we bring Adam on. I'm not even going to say the first and third Monday anymore, because that seems to be getting kind of out of whack. But we bring Adam in whenever we can for Adam Rants, and so Adam, the floor is yours. Give us a rant.
I feel like I'm getting the GM, and I'm Saturn. I'm slowly being faded out right now. I don't know. hurry up and get me while I'm still on the market. Pretty soon there's not going to be any new Saturn. Well, there aren't any. I enjoy coming on the show when I can, and it's been, pretty busy for me. I don't really know where to start as far as where to talk, because I feel like there's so many things. But I will say, a week and a half ago, I made it down to Detroit and went to the Sound Mind, Sound Body Camp, and was able to speak with some coaches, Les Miles, Mark D'Antonio was down there, Brady Hope. But probably the best interviews that I had were with Greg Madison, and that guy made me want to put a uniform on and tackle somebody. And I wrote probably that verbatim, but it's true. The guy energy, and especially just at some summer camp, he's not in front of cameras, there's not a ton of media there, and Madison, the way that he speaks, I was just like, all right, put me in, coach, let's go. I think that, Michigan's defense, while people are talking about it, I think people need to talk about it a lot more, and I'm going to start getting it more into football mode. We're not too far out. I think it's fair right now to assume that the defense is going to be the strength of that team. I don't see the offense being the strength of the Michigan team because of Jeremy Gallen leaving and Michigan returning three guys with 15 or more catches. And Jake Butt is one of them, and Jake Butt isn't going to be available in the early goings. He may join in by Big Ten season start. So I think right now, as far as if you're a Michigan football fan, be very confident in the defense. That secondary, without Jabril Peppers, let's not even talk about Jabril, that secondary looks really good too. So, you know, as far as that goes, I guess I look at the Tigers because it's a love-hate relationship for me right now. Deep down there, the Tigers are always, you know, my hometown team. But I find it hard to believe that a team with so much talent can just lose this way. And I'm wondering if there's a rift in the clubhouse. I'm wondering if there's something going on that we don't know about. And I don't know. I guess maybe I'm just, always skeptical. But I think that they're doing a little bit right now on the four-game winning streak to maybe prove the doubters wrong. Maybe they just were playing horrible baseball and that was the case. But I guess I'm just frustrated with the Tigers. And the more Bless You Boys updates I read, I'm either happy or incredibly sad. So I blame that on Al Beaton and the rest of the guys at BYB.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time that Bless You Boys has been blamed for any number of things. Adam Vickers, of course, joins us. I hesitate to say the first and third Monday of every month. That's what it's supposed to be, but just we'll let you know when he's going to be on. You can read him at Bleacher Report. You can check him out on his own podcast and Blog Talk Radio. He's at a number of places. Just Google the guy. Follow him at AdamVickers81 on Twitter. Or is it AdamVickers81, correct? Is it your Twitter handle?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Adam
follow Biggers him on Twitter. Right, exactly. And so anyway, thanks, Adam, for joining us for the Travis Bader interview, and thanks for the rant, and we will see you in a couple of weeks.
All right, thanks a lot. It was a pleasure getting a chance to talk to Bader, and I'll be a Bader fan Thursday night for sure. So hopefully he gets his name called. Even if he's Mr. Irrelevant and he's last pick, at least he made it. So there's not many guys who have the talent of, as he said, what's very important is it's a game of putting the ball in the hole. And there aren't too many guys out there who can do it better than him. So good luck, Travis.
Absolutely. Thanks, Adam. Take care. Al, let's do clue number two of whose birthday is it, if you don't mind. Clue was I was born on this date, well, actually yesterday's date, in 1962. I was a 10-time NBA All-Star. I had my uniform number retired at my college, which was Houston, and also the two teams in the NBA that I played for. I won an NBA title in 1995, and I'm the all-time leading scorer for the team that drafted me in 1983.
All right. I think I have this now. I had to put this together a little bit, but I guess I was surprised because I thought he went a little higher in the draft than he actually did.
Right.
But it's he played for Houston and Portland, and I think you're talking about Clyde Drexler.
Clyde the Glide. I absolutely am. Clyde is 52 years old yesterday, and happy birthday to Clyde. And he was a member, of course, of Phi Slamma Jamma.
Exactly.
At Houston, along with, I think his career there overlapped for 1 year with Olajuwon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Of course, they were also some victims of one of the biggest upsets in NCAA.
Yep.
March Madness history, the 1983 team that lost to North Carolina State. But, Clyde Drexler is the correct answer. And so for that correct answer, an extra-large tube of Brill Cream is on its way to the Beaton residence.
Hey, if you find some Vitalis, throw that in as well.
Vitalis, gosh, that's another one. All right, well, but we should mention, too, by the way, that in coming up next month, Al, on July 20th, Eastern Michigan football coach Chris Creighton will join us.
Wonderful.
Coach Creighton reached out to me on Friday, actually. He read a piece I wrote about Eastern's new gray football field and thought it was something he liked a lot, and thought it was a very fair piece, and we got to talking. And I invited him on the show right then and there, and he said he would love to do the show. So we went through the proper channels, and July 20th is going to be the date we will record Coach Creighton, who is trying to turn around that program. A number of people have tried to turn that program around and have failed, unfortunately. So we'll see if Coach Creighton can be the one that will finally be able to do it. That'll be on July the 21st is when that will air on the Knee-Jerks. Al, we are saw, like, we're also tell the viewers that we didn't purposely leave Al out of that interview, by the way. He told Adam and I to just go ahead and take that interview and run with it.
So, yeah, Adam was here expressly to talk to him.
Right.
Let's let Adam have the floor. So I had no problem with that.
Right. So I don't want people to think that we just intentionally ignoring Al.
No, trust me.
Right. Okay.
What we have to talk about here, actually, not a lot going on locally. It's been almost all Detroit Tigers. Let alone, and it depends, there's kind of a schism as well if you're a soccer fan or not, because the World Cup has really overtaken a lot of the sports world, and I think really for the first time the World Cup is making an impact in the United States, but I think, and this is that part of the discussion, we're going to have a little divide here, so I know Greg has barely watched, I don't think he's watched any of it, well, I've really been watching a lot of the games, so we'll talk a little bit about the World Cup and get our thoughts on the pros and cons of soccer, I guess. But the majority of the rest of the show will be Detroit Tigers because, well, there's been a lot going on there between losing, but then all of a sudden they remembered they were a good team and started winning again. Brad Ausmus caused a firestorm with a very bad joke. Joe Nathan might be fixed, might not be, and there's some outfield issues the Tigers need to sort out, Greg. So, well, let's start with they're actually starting to play better in that they swept the Cleveland Indians. It's, you know, it's kind of fitting in a way because this whole ugly stretch of baseball, Greg, started when after they had swept the Orioles in Boston a month ago, and then the plane was delayed. We had the Zubas that were people they were going nuts over, and then they arrived in Cleveland late, and then the losing started when they got swept by Cleveland. 1 month later, after a 10-20 stretch, and the Tigers actually fell out of first place for a couple of days, they've won four in a row. They've swept the Cleveland Indians, and they're leading the Central's back to 2.5 games. And things are starting to look like, well, not like things are going to be okay. It was a brutal stretch of baseball, Greg, when they played 10 games under 500. And they've now won more than two games in a row for the first time since they swept Boston. So what's your thoughts now? Because I think the panic is over because there was a point there. I think there was a segment of this fan base who just wanted to start cutting everybody and firing Brad Ausmus every day.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the difference was so stark. I mean, they were 27-12 and I wrote the infamous piece on Bless You Boys that declared the division over with. And not long after that, the misconception is they went into the tank right after that. But they were 29 when I wrote that. They won 7-3 afterward. Yeah. Then they went into the tank. You're right. It started with that weird commute to Cleveland. And then they're a little bit full of themselves, I think, with the Zubas pants. I think they got a little bit too cutesy. And then that's when all of a sudden things started to go sideways. I mean, every aspect of their game went sideways. And the thing that really, I think, stunned people is that the one thing that fans thought they could always count on, which was the starting pitching, went sideways. And that was a little scary, frankly, because only Anibal Sanchez was the only guy that was really turning in quality starts with any regularity. And he wasn't even winning. You know, he was turning in these great starts, and the Tigers would never win. And so that was disconcerting. But like you said, they're on a four, as we record this, they're on a four-game winning streak, kind of got righted a little bit. They're back in first place by 2.5 games because the Royals have gone on a four-game losing streak.
You know who they can thank for that? Lloyd McClendon's Mariners swept Kansas City.
Yeah, Lloyd McClendon, by the way, is an early candidate for Manager of the Year, by the way. The job he's been doing over there in Seattle. Robinson Cano doesn't hurt, but still, I mean, McClendon has been doing a good job over there. I think what happened, Al, is that you're going to go through this stretch, of course, but 30 games is still 30 games. That's almost 20% of the season.
Right.
That went on a little bit too long. I mean, you kind of figured that maybe 10 or 15 games you're going to stumble a little bit, but 30 games, I mean, it was getting to the point where, there were reports that the team was kind of not having any fun. They're a little down in the mouth. The reporters were saying that the atmosphere in the clubhouse wasn't very jovial, as you would expect for a team that's losing. But this four-game winning streak now that they're on has really settled things down. The starting pitching has settled down. The timely hitting is back. They're getting production now from guys other, you know, from the fifth through ninth spot. Now this guys are starting to chip in a little bit more. J.D. Martinez is turning out to be quite a find. He's been on fire.
Yeah.
And Joe Nathan, like you said, they said they found a mechanic that they needed to fix, and they think they fixed it. And since they fixed it, he has pitched well. He did blow a save on Saturday. But I wasn't really that upset by that because he got the first two outs on strikeouts, and the Indians got three straight two-out, two-strike base hits,
yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, that happens sometimes. I really wasn't all that upset with Nathan about that. Phil Koch has been pitching better lately.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's some glimmer of hope that maybe the bullpen might right itself a little bit, but then you had Ian Kroll, who was trying to pitch to a dead arm, and he got lit up on over the weekend, and they put him on the DL. So there's still some, you know, Albuquerque kind of had a misfire. So there's still some issues there for sure. But things, Al, I think it starts with the starting pitching settling down. Once the starting pitching kind of settled down a little bit,
mm-hmm.
You know, after those two horrific starts by Verlander and Scherzer early in the week against Kansas City, things have really started to settle down now. And that, I think, has kind of calmed the whole team down.
Yeah, and it's not a coincidence that the Tigers have five consecutive quality starts and they have a four-game winning streak. So, but, there's some fluke things that happened that you got to wonder if we'll ever see again. Like Max Scherzer having a 51-pitch inning.
Yeah,
Weird stuff like that. And it was
right.
Just anything that could go wrong did go wrong. But you're right. I think the biggest deal was that the starting pitching, which this team is really built around, when that goes off the rails, there's not much stopping that keeping this team that can stay on the rails because, you know, Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez can only do so much.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, between that and the unexpected struggles of Joe Nathan, you know, there's, you know, a few games there. If Nathan is the Nathan they thought they were getting, and they, you know, there's like three or four games there that the Tigers win that they ended up losing instead, maybe this whole streak looks different. But let's hope that the arm slot issue they found of Joe Nathan fixes things. But another thing that might play into this, Greg, that maybe the team has decided to circle the wagons around Brad Ausmus because he had a bad week. And even in a post-game interview, Brad Ausmus admitted that after his little faux pas, he said, I had probably the worst 24 hours you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Because he made another rookie mistake, and that plays into this losing streak as well. Because there's been some moves Ausmus has done that backfired on him. But I think everything came to a head during the Kansas City series when he was asked how he handles losing at home, and he jokingly said, "I beat my wife," on Wednesday, and that caused an absolute firestorm of controversy, and then obviously numerous apologies. To Ausmus's credit, Greg, he immediately realized that I said something I shouldn't have, and not even a minute after he made that statement, he came back out to the media and issued an apology. But
yeah.
In today's 24/7 news cycle, with the social media being all over this, the reaction was over the top, you know, anti-Ausmus, and yeah, he did deserve some of what he had coming to him because it was nothing. You don't joke about spousal abuse; you just don't, especially the face of the franchise. But some of it, the reaction, Greg, was over the top, such as ESPN's Keith Law, who really does seem to have a grudge against the Tigers. He called Ausmus a psychopath on Twitter. You know, he says only psychopaths joke about this. Others called for fines, suspensions, you know, fairly harsh penalties. But the Tigers in Major League Baseball were appeased by Ausmus's obviously sincere apologies. I mean, he was very, very regretful over what he said. Now, we're not talking about a dumb man here either. I mean, this is an Ivy League grad. And Ausmus did say that he is going to do some work with spousal abuse, people who work with spousal abuse, and he's not going to make a big deal out of it, and pretty much case closed. Do you think some of the reaction that Ausmus got, Greg, was an excuse to rip him and the team because of the losing streak? Because, yeah, he did deserve to be criticized, no doubt. But I think some of the over-the-top stuff I think was more frustration that this came at the end of a major, major losing streak.
Yeah, that didn't help. Well, you know, the fact that it happened in the midst of this, you know, this really bad stretch of baseball just kind of made – it was just one more thing for everybody to have to deal with. And sometimes when you are going for laughs, which, you know, happens to people, you go – I've done it. You know, you go for a laugh, and the laugh you go for is short-lived versus maybe you said something you wish you hadn't have said, and – he kind of maybe went too far to get that laugh, and I'm sure he was trying to go for a laugh, and immediately realized that that laugh probably wasn't worth going for, and immediately made the apology, and then apologized the next day, and like you said, he was clearly sincere, clearly remorseful, and I'm sure that had a lot to do with the fact that he did not, you know, incur any punishment from Major League Baseball or the Tigers or anybody else. You know, so yeah, I mean, but it was an opportunity for folks to kind of jump off a little bit, and because it was just one more thing to have to deal with. I mean, there was so much stuff going on with the way they were losing games, walk-off balks, and wacky defense, and implosions by pitchers that you've never seen implode before. Just all sorts of weirdness. I think it was even stated in the paper the other day that even the umpires were saying to the Tigers in the field, boy, you guys aren't getting any breaks, you know, these days. Things were just not, you know, bouncing balls off of bases, and you know, just all sorts of ways that the baseball gods were going against them. And this was just one more thing now to have to deal with, which of course became a national thing. Keith Law, by the way, is, you know, this is his reaction to this speaks way more about Keith Law than it does Brett Austin's, because he said the tweet was, "What kind of a psychopath jokes about spousal abuse?" And then later on, somebody confronted him and said, so you called him are you likening Brad Ausmus to a psychopath? And Keith Law said, "I don't see where I did that."
Yeah.
Well, how stupid do you think we are, Keith? I mean, you clearly drew a parallel between Brad Ausmus and a psychopath. You used what Ausmus said and the word psychopath in a tweet. Yeah. What else are we to think? So that he's a moron anyway.
Yeah.
So there was that reaction, and you know, thankfully the Tigers have kind of, you know, they went on a 4-game winning streak immediately after that remark, which, you know, could of course very well could be coincidental, but it I think it's, you know, it's kind of over and done with. But the good thing about the 24-hour news cycle, Al, is that it is a 24-hour news cycle. We move on to other things usually pretty quickly. We're on to something else usually. Things like this typically don't really linger for too long, especially when the person who says it does not double down on it and dig their heels in, which Brad Ausmus did not do at all. He didn't
win some games right afterwards.
that doesn't hurt either. You know, winning doesn't hurt either. But no, I think things are kind of, you know, maybe, you know, the Tigers reached their nadir, and we'll look back on this in September and kind of chuckle about, oh, remember when they went 10-20, and remember when they fell out of first place briefly. Things are back to normal. They're 5 games ahead now in the loss column with the Royals. So I think things are starting to, you know, kind of level out a little bit the way they should be. But the Austin thing was, and you're right about the rookie mistakes. And I think you made a good point in the show notes. I think it was you that said that, you know, that you said, well, is this something that maybe somebody like Jim Leland doesn't do? Because Jim Leland...
That was going to be my next question for you.
Yeah, 7 or 8 years that Jim was here, 8, I guess, he did not, you know, he didn't come close to anything like this. There was never a firestorm, any controversy about anything he said, really. There really wasn't. And certainly nothing that anybody would take offense to. He just certainly didn't say anything that would offend a group of people. You know, he didn't say anything that was anything remotely, you know, racist or gender bashing, nothing at all like that at all.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm not sure that speaks to the fact that he's been in the game for so long, or if that's just not the way he does things. But, you know, now here you got a younger guy who, again, trying to go for a laugh and clearly, you know, went about the wrong way. But I think that's a good question you raise about whether or not somebody. Well, just the observation you made that somebody like Jim Leland never came close to uttering anything remotely like that.
Yeah, and you know, it really goes to the show. That was really, you know, for all the fans that always focus Jim Leland on the on-field stuff, the X's and O's, where for the most part, he really doesn't have that much input. You know, he'll decide when to bunt or pull a pitcher, but he, for the most part, all managers pretty much make the same move. His biggest job was running that clubhouse, being the point man for the media, and keeping everybody happy, and there was very few people in the game of baseball better at that than Jim Leland. The players loved him. The media loved him. He never caused any sort of problems when it came to, like we just saw, Brad Ausmus. Jim Leland was a master. He was a veteran of this kind of thing, and he knew how to wade these kind of waters. You know, and I'm sure there was times he probably said some off-color stuff, but it was always off the record. You know,
right.
Not with a microphone in front of him. Not when not in the middle of a press conference like this one.
Right.
And that's,
right.
I think, the difference. And that's hopefully the kind of thing Brad Ausmus is going to learn, because he's, as you said, he's making rookie mistakes, and at times the Tigers have paid for that.
Yeah.
But
you know, what's interesting, too, Al, about Brad Ausmus, I noticed, is that whenever at home games, whenever the media would talk to Jim Leland, it was always done in Jim Leland's office.
Yep.
But when Brad Ausmus, I noticed, I'm not sure if this is just a shift because – it's a coincidence that they're doing it this year, or it's because it's Brad Ausmus.
Yeah.
When he does his post-game press conference, it's always in a press conference-type setting. It's
at a
table, a microphone. He's not interviewed in his office like Jim Leland was.
Yeah.
I found that, I don't know why that is, but I thought that was an interesting change.
Yeah, and that probably makes a big difference. And because you're right, because we always saw Jim Leland. He was usually in his skivvies, you know, with a plate of food in front of him.
Right.
You know, And if he went off on a tangent, it was almost always baseball-related. No, he did say a few things that got him into trouble, but it was always baseball-related, not public relations-related. That's the difference. All right, Greg, while we're talking about all this, and I know you brought him up earlier, we really need to talk about what's going on in the outfield, because they've been getting very, very, very little production out of the corners, and Austin Jackson has become amazingly streaky. You know, he'll be white hot for a week and then won't hit anything for a week. But it's going to be things got to come to a head, I think, in the Tigers outfield, because Ausmus is going to, and for that matter, Dave Browski is going to have some decisions to make. Torrey Hunter stopped hitting 5 or 6 weeks ago, and his defense is, if you go by sabermetric numbers, the worst in baseball. And he's been offered over about a week now with a bad hamstring. And J.D. Martinez has stepped in, and he was actually hitting the ball before this, but he has stepped in and been a huge and pleasant surprise. He's hitting over 300. He's slugging close to 600, and he's supplying power that the Tigers really have lacked, especially from the outfield. Then you have Rajai Davis, who is a serviceable outfielder who has a spot, who really, you know, he plays a role in this team, but he's being exposed because he's playing every day. He should not be playing against right-handed pitching, period. And then, obviously, Andy Dierks is going to be coming back probably sometime around the All-Star break. And he is the Tigers' second-best defensive outfielder behind Jackson. And he would, I think, a platoon in left with him and Davis will be fine. The question is, you can't take J.D. Martinez out of the lineup right now. So the question is, what do you do? And for that matter, maybe who gets cut? Because I'm Don Kelly, I'm starting to worry, because his main role right now, with Andrew Romine pretty much being the backup infielder, is the fifth outfielder. So if anything right now, if I'm Torrey Hunter, I'm worried if I'm getting benched. And if I'm Don Kelly, I'm worried if I have a job.
Well, you know, this is a problem that I don't think anybody foresaw the Tigers having when the season began. I don't think anybody thought, Roy, even with Andy Dierks out of the mix, I don't think anybody thought that there would be any sort of an issue like this one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's arisen because of what you mentioned. Torrey Hunter has stopped hitting, like you said. The emergence of J.D. Martinez, who wasn't even signed by the Tigers until spring training almost it was over with. And so that has caused this problem. And you know, in a way, it's a good problem to have, because you've got a guy that you weren't counting on, J.D. Martinez, who is, putting up big numbers, really big numbers, which is even bigger because Torrey Hunter is not putting up numbers. So now at least you've got one corner outfielder who's doing something.
Mm-hmm.
But then you've got both of them, Davis and Jay Martinez, are both right-handed hitters, and,
yes.
and that's an unusual situation. And,
exactly.
You know, sometimes Rajay will play, he'll bat leadoff, sometimes he'll bat ninth, depending on the situation. And J.D. Martinez has kind of claimed that fifth spot behind Victor Martinez with his power and his ability to hit the ball real hard and real far. I wrote this in Monday Morning Manager, which is by the time people hear this, it will already be out. But what I said in Monday Morning Manager was that, you know, there's some people that might be a little bit, four people who are a little bit concerned that J.D. Martinez might be the second coming of Tuiasosopo or Brendan Bosch.
Yeah.
My retort to that is, unlike Bosch and unlike Tuiasosopo, J.D. Martinez has 1,000 at-bats in the big leagues. Okay,
yeah.
He's not a guy that just came out of the blue and was a career minor leaguer and all of a sudden...
As a fairly high-level prospect with the Astros.
He had over 900... Coming into the season, he had about 900 at-bats in the big leagues before he even put on a Tigers uniform. So this is a guy who's played in the big leagues. He's hit some power in the big leagues. I don't know why the Astros released him. I really don't. I mean, they're the Astros, for God's sake. I don't know why they couldn't have used a guy like that. But J.D. Martinez is, this isn't his first rodeo. He's been through the big leagues before. He's played on big league teams. And he's shown that he has some pop. So for those who think that this is just a mirage, it may not be because, he's a big league ball player. He's not a 4A player. He's a big league ball player, and he's showing why he's a big league ball player. Now, I don't expect him necessarily to hit home run every 14 at-bats like he's doing right now, but obviously you ride the hot hand. But
that power bat the Tigers need, even if it's coming off the bench.
The only thing that would make him better is if he hit left-handed. That would be the only thing that would make J.D. Martinez better, but he doesn't. The other thing that would make him better is if he could play defense, which he can't. That's the problem. He's a very poor fielder, poor defender. He's just not very good. But he's a left fielder.
Hunter.
I guess from the metric standpoint, he is. As a left fielder, he's serviceable, but he's not very good. Let's face
right.
it.
Oh,
and Davis isn't, and Rajay Davis isn't very good either. Neither of them are very good.
Scary out there. He can be scary.
But they're still better than Dylan Young. But that's okay. I mean, right now the Tigers, they kind of needed to hit their way out of this thing because of the pitching was so bad, they had to score runs in order to win ball games. So along comes J.D. Martinez at just the right time. Last week he had 11 hits. He had four of those were home runs. One of them was a grand slam. He's just absolutely smoking the baseball right now. Just absolutely obliterating the baseball. So good for him. But as far as the situation, though, when Dierks comes back, Don Kelly, Brad Ausmus said something earlier in the season about Don Kelly, about how valuable Brad thinks Don is because of all the positions he can play,
yeah.
Especially when they get into interleague play and they play National League teams, especially on the road. And, I can see that. I mean, Don Kelly can theoretically play every position literally on the field if you need him to. And he does hit left-handed, which he's not much of a hitter, but he does hit left-handed. That doesn't hurt him. But, Andy Dierks is left-handed, too. So I think that, I think that I'm likely to cut Torii Hunter because of, A, I don't think you can have too many veterans on your team. On a team that's expected to win, like the Tigers are, come playoff time, I don't think you can have too many guys who have been through the wars a little bit, and Torii Hunter certainly is one of those guys. Secondly, I just think that he's very valuable in the clubhouse. I think he's a great teammate. I think he's a great guy, and I think that means something as well. So I really think that it might be Don Kelly who might be the odd man out. It would be probably a tough thing for the Tigers to do because I know there's a feeling for Don Kelly. He's a nice guy. He's been around since 2009. He's done a lot. He's done everything the Tigers have asked him to do. He's actually had some pretty clutch hits in the playoffs. It's funny. He's really done some things that you really kind of hate to say goodbye to. But in this business, it's called, are you producing? Who's producing more?
Right.
Clearly, J.D. Martinez is. Although he's one-dimensional, J.D. can only play left or right field. But, here's the thing, Alan. I talked about this way back when Andy Dierks, the news broke that he was going to have back surgery. I drew the parallel to you. I said, you've had back problems. I said, can you honestly say that Andy Dirks can come back from this back issue like nothing has ever happened. And you said it's very possible he may not, because the back is a very fun, once you start having surgery on it, especially, and you know this, and other athletes do too, when once you start to have, it's one thing to just have a bad back or a stiff back, but once you start to have the doctors go in there and you have surgery on your back, there's no guarantee that you're going to come back, first of all, A, at all, or B, to the level where you were before you got hurt. So everybody was counting on it, just penciling Andy Dirks in as if he's just going to step in and just be, pick up where he left off for fooling themselves. First of all, it's not only just is a back surgery, but, you know, he's got to get his timing back. He's got to, you know, he's got to get his sea legs underneath him. It's going to take a little while. Secondly, there's this back issue now, which we don't know if the surgery solved everything. He could land funny chasing a fly ball. He could move his back funny on a swing, and all of a sudden he's back on the DL again.
Yeah.
So people will just think that he's just going to step in and just step right in and act like nothing happened. I think that's asking an awful lot.
Yeah, it's the same with Hanrahan, who's still who the Tigers signed to hopefully help shore up the bullpen. There's going to be outside expectations for him, and he still hasn't fully recovered from Tommy John. So it's the Tigers have a little few conundrums here that they're going to need to sort out, and I would not be surprised, depending on how Andy Dirks is, if he shows, you know, hopefully he'll be back before the trade deadline, and he'll be able to show the Tigers enough that maybe they won't need to be traded for a bat at the deadline. Otherwise, they're going to need it. They need more, a little more offense, especially out of the outfield and specifically from the left-hand side of the plate. So I'm concerned about this outfield, especially Torrey Hunter. If Torrey Hunter can at least show he's not done as he's looked over the past month and plus, that'll help the Tigers out a lot. But right now, like, Torrey Hunter has looked awful right now, and he's been really an anchor on that offense in the batting, because he's either been batting number two or number five, and he's not producing at all. So, but let me ask you this, Greg, real quick before we move on to Joe Nathan, a shortstop. Suarez has got off to a hot start, but over his last seven or eight games, he's fell off a cliff. So he was looking like solution for a while, but now he's got to have to prove like Nick Castellanos. Once the league kind of gets a number on you, you have to readjust. Castellanos has done that. We have to find out if Suarez can.
Yeah, there's that, too. I mean, you know, the Tigers, whether it was going to be Iglesias or not, weren't figuring to get a whole lot of offense out of the shortstop position. The thing about Suarez, the thing that made him so attractive at the time that he came up was because that was, again, right in the midst of this horrific spate of baseball where they were getting absolutely nothing from the sixth through ninth spots in the order. I mean, really nothing at all. And I forgot to mention, Ian Kinsler was another guy who went sideways.
Yeah. He's hitting the ball again, thank goodness.
Yeah, he's hitting the ball again. He's getting back to form, but he was another guy that fell off a cliff, to use your term. And that kind of, you know, it's so important. When your top one or two guys aren't getting on base, that just really bogs down the rest. I don't care who you got batting third, fourth, or fifth.
Mm-hmm.
If those top two guys aren't getting on base and making things happen, you know, it just bogs everything down. And that's what happened with Kinsler. He wasn't getting on base. The guy, the flavor of the day that was batting behind him, wasn't getting on base that much either. So it didn't matter what happened when Cabrera came up or Martinez came up or whatever, because, you know. But back to Suarez. So Suarez came up, and it was a time where the Tigers were just absolutely begging for somebody to hit in the bottom of the order, and he did that. He started like gangbusters. He had three home runs, I think, in his first week in the big leagues, and was really hitting the ball well, and his defense was pretty good, too. And, you know, you felt like, oh, maybe we lucked out again, just like we lucked out last year. We got Iglesias. We didn't think we were going to get Iglesias, and Iglesias came along and kind of, you know, cemented shortstop in Johnny Peralta's absence, and all of a sudden, you know, that seemed to be heaven sent. And now here comes Suarez, and we thought, okay, you know, wow, maybe we got lucky again, and we got another shortstop that's going to kind of settle things down, and then, you know, help us through the rest of the year. And Although I still thought that Suarez would still maybe be a bargaining chip for somebody else in the offseason, knowing that Iglesias was going to come back and reclaim the starting position. But, you know, he got off to such a hot start, people were saying, you know, I even jokingly said, Jose who? And But, you know, clearly, we all know, and we've seen this before, Al. You know, guys come up to the big leagues, and they chair the ball, cover off the ball for a while, and then you don't hear from them ever again for at least for a while. So it's still an issue, but I still think right now, Al, that the Tigers' biggest issue at shortstop is just catching the ball and throwing it right now. Just get to the ball, make big league plays. If the rest of the guys can just do their thing and live up to the resumes and just, you know, kick it up a little bit, then the shortstop thing I think will be okay. I mean, I don't expect Suarez to hit 300. I don't expect him to hit 15 home runs, but he clearly, probably of all the shortstops that have auditioned so far this year, he's clearly, I think, got the best bat. And his defense is pretty good, too. He's got a rifle of an arm. I was impressed with some of the throws he's made. But all I ask out of that position, whether it's Romine or whether it's Suarez, is just catch the ball, make big league plays, you know, get a hit now and then, but mainly just play solid defense and let everybody else do the offense part of it, the Castellanoses and the Kinlows and the Carreras. Let everybody else, Victor Martinez, do their thing and you know, we won't worry so much about whether or not we're getting production out of the shortstop position. We weren't expecting it anyway, frankly. I mean, did anybody really think that Jose Iglesias was going to be 300 this year? No, I didn't. So, you know, I think you just have to kind of keep things in perspective here. But I will say this, that kid did come in, and he did help the Tigers win some ballgames at a time where they badly needed to win some games.
And you're right. At the very least, he has shown. Looks like he is a big league ball player. Just, you know, it's how good of a ball player yet to be determined. But it's also a little too early. As like Lynn Hanning was on Twitter during the week saying the Tigers need to trade Ian Kinsler and then make Suarez their second baseman. And like, come hold your horses. Exactly. So
I'm surprised Lynn Hanning would say that.
Oh my God! He went on this fire sale rant during the Kansas City series, and that sounds kind of ridiculous. Now the Tigers are starting to like right the ship. But speaking of righting the ship, we have Joe Nathan. He looked like he had been in that, not Nathan last year, but he had a stretch where he looked like he was going to be fine. He had saved, I think, 7 or 8 games in a row, and it went over about 10 games, about long a run, and then the wheels fell off. He had a 10-game stretch worth a 13.5 ERA, I think 3 blown saves. It was just an ugly, ugly stretch of baseball. Things came to a head. He says they think they found an arm slot issue, the mechanical tweak, and immediately after that, he started missing bats again. He converted 2 saves the last game of the Kansas City series and the first game of the Cleveland series. He was asked to get 3 saves in a row, and you brought up that game on Saturday night where he got the first 2 strikeouts and then went to a 2-strike count on 3 consecutive batters, couple C&I hits and another one, you know, and a legit single, and the next thing you know, the game's tied. But he still looked better than he had for almost a month. So. Yeah. A lot that ails his Tigers bullpen, Greg, can be fixed if Joe Nathan is Joe Nathan and not the guy who's blowing every other save, but the guy who misses bats. And at least at the end of the week, he looked like the guy who misses bats again.
Yeah. They found a mechanical flaw, and you mentioned the arm slot thing, and they think they fixed that. He looked more comfortable out there. He looked more confident. Mm-hmm. Even that blown save on Saturday, those things happen. I think that if he can get it back together and be the Joe Nathan that we knew him as an opponent, you know, that would be just so big for this team.
Yeah.
Because the last thing you want to do is spend all that money on a closer, $12 million or whatever it is a year, or whatever he's making, and then realize that you haven't solved anything, which for a while looked like that's what had happened, is that you would spend all this money to solve an issue that turns out was not solved. And, you know, he wasn't the only guilty party, of course, during that 4-13 stretch. But he didn't help, that's for sure. And so, you know, that again, that was just another thing, Alan. Then there was the whole thing about did he throw Nick Castellanos under the bus in Oakland? And, you know, just that was just another thing to deal with, another thing to talk about that nobody wanted to talk about. So all this stuff was going on amidst this terrible stretch, this last month that just was just, boy, just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, Brad Auspice, almost to a fault, kept saying, you know, I'm not worried, there's nothing to be worried about, which, you know, I can understand, I appreciate the wanting to be calm and wanting to be, you know, not ruffled, and I get all that, but sometimes you can, if you keep doing that, you look kind of like you're naive, and you're in denial, because there certainly was something to be concerned about. I mean, but I know he doesn't want to come out there and say those things, because he's got a veteran guy. He doesn't want to, you know, if a manager said everything that a Tigers fan wanted a manager to say, boy, that would be something. Can you imagine such a world?
Oh,
you know, they want him to kick over, you know, the post game spread and rant and rave and say they want them to call people out and, you know, whatever. That's not the way it works, and especially in a 162 game season, you don't get like that. And fortunately, Brad didn't do that, although he kind of piled on Nick Castellanos in Oakland. But other than that, he's been kind of, you know, he's been maybe to a fault a little bit too, everything's going to be okay thing, which, you know, but maybe publicly or privately he may be saying something else, I don't know. But, you know, Nathan is at his best, obviously, was almost unhittable. Now, I don't expect him to be unhittable this year anymore,
mm-hmm.
but I do expect him to save ball games more often than not. And I think we're starting to see now, like you mentioned, the swings and misses, missing the bats. Part of Joe Nathan's problem, frankly, I mentioned it on Monday Morning Manager a couple weeks ago, is that he wasn't actually getting the best of luck either. I mean, guys were hitting balls that were bouncing up the middle, between fielders, bloop singles. He wasn't getting a lot of, in hockey they call it puck luck.
Yeah.
He wasn't getting a lot of baseball luck either. I mean, part of that was because he was pitching to contact. And when you pitch to contact as a closer, you kind of hold your breath because anything can happen. I mean, the game is obviously in the balance. You don't have much margin for error. You know, all it takes is a bleeding, you know, a bleeder through the infield, a seeing eye base hit, a Texas leaguer, and all of a sudden the bases are loaded. And, you know, so you need luck as a closer. If you're going to, once that bat hits the ball, you need it to be hit to somebody because, you know, once you start hitting the baseball, that's why it's so important to have closers who can strike guys out, who can get swings and misses, who can get ahead of the count and have hitters hitting defensively. Because for a while there, as you know, you saw the games, hitters were awfully comfortable, looked awfully comfortable against Joe Nathan.
Yeah, it's it was refreshing to see him at least striking guys out, because that was the one thing he had stopped doing. And like I said, I'm holding off judging on that Saturday game, because that was, again, there was a little bit of bad luck there. I mean, David Murphy extended the game. He was the first guy to send the game. He stuck his bat out and sent a looper in the center. You know, if he hits that 10 feet in the other direction, either direction, it's an out. So it was just one of those things. So, but if Nathan is Nathan, let's hope Nathan is Nathan. The Tigers will have solved the big problem. So, all right, let's hit the home stretch in the show, Greg, and talk about the World Cup, because I know you posted on Facebook the other day that you hadn't watched a single minute of any of the soccer games, and that's hard to do because ESPN and ABC have shown every single game. I'm not just talking the U.S. men's national team. I'm talking about every single game of the World Cup. ESPN, throughout during the day especially, has been nothing but soccer, you know, starting from about 11 o'clock in the morning to about 7 o'clock at night. And it's going to be like that probably for the next 3 weeks. So World Cup's a month-long thing. You had said you hadn't watched any. You had trouble getting into soccer. And I just found it interesting because we're both about the same age. We come from the same type of sports background. And I've been watching a lot of the World Cup and actually enjoying it. I mean, I waited to the last minute to get this podcast started because I got wrapped up in today's Portugal-U.S. U.S. game that was an absolute gut punch of a game because Portugal tied the game up in the last 30 seconds of the game in stoppage time. So I'm actually starting to get caught up in it, Greg. And I'm not a guy – I never played soccer at all in my life. I'm still trying to get a grasp of the nuances of the game because I never played it, unlike football and baseball and basketball. But – I'm finding myself enjoying watching a sport being played at its highest level, much like the Olympics. This is essentially the Super Bowl, the Olympics of soccer. And according to you, you just can't get into it. So I wanted to go a little bit into that. You just don't seem to enjoy the game of soccer?
Well, you know what it is? I have tried for so many years to – first of all, I want to say this, and this is what I said on Facebook. I will never begrudge the athletic ability of soccer players. I think they are some of the best athletes in the world. I think they're some of the most conditioned athletes in the world because of the length of time they're out on the pitch and how often and how long they have to play and how much ground they have to cover. I will never begrudge their abilities to do the things that they can do with their feet and with the soccer ball, with the limitations that sport places on you in terms of what parts of the body you can use. I've tried many, many times to sit myself, even if I just happen to catch, if I'm channel surfing and I see a soccer game unexpectedly, I've stopped in the past, left the thing on, and tried my hardest to appreciate the game and try to get past the fact that there aren't going to be a lot of goals scored and what have you. And I really tried to appreciate the spectacle, and I just find myself after 10 or 15 minutes zoning out and losing interest. Then I thought, I said, you know what, there's no crime in that. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of people in other countries that would rather watch paint dry than watch a baseball game, which is our national pastime.
Right.
And Americans can't like everything. Okay, I mean, and the thing also about the World Cup is it happens so infrequently that I don't know any of the players, which I know maybe sometimes you don't have to know the players to appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
A close game and a well played game. The other thing I said on Facebook is I kind of am jealous of people like you and others who aren't by trade soccer fans, but who have found themselves getting wrapped up in this. I kind of feel a little jealous because I feel like I'm missing out on something that you guys are enjoying. It's never been for lack of trying. I've been trying to like soccer for 20 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't do it, and I don't know why. I don't know if it's because there's a lack of scoring, or if it's because too much of the action in my mind is forgettable. I would liken it to watching a hockey game that's played 50 of the 60 minutes between the blue lines.
Yeah.
And I would not want to watch a hockey game that's played 50 or 60 minutes between the blue lines either. That's what I liken soccer to. Now, I said my piece, so you tell me why you have been getting engrossed in it.
Well, one is that I'm starting to grasp the nuances because I've been able to watch a lot of it, you know, because I have the ability. I'm home every day, so I'm able to watch. But, you know, if I'm here, you know, and I'm not writing or something, I have ESPN on, and I'm able to watch each game as they're played, or at least have them on in the background. I'm not watching every game religiously, but, you know, I've been watching the big games, obviously the U.S. games, and I'm starting to get the nuances. I'm starting to figure out, okay, that's what offsides is. I'm starting to figure out what midfielders do and, you know, and that sort of thing. And, and I'm starting to appreciate the athletic ability of some of the of these guys. You know, some of these players are absolutely, as you said, they're marvelous, marvelous athletes. And I think part of it is I tend to be a big fan of the Olympics, and no, those only happen every 4 years, so actually every 2 years between winter and summer. But I tend to enjoy sports that are played at the highest of levels, and this is the best in the world playing in the most important tournament. Because I'll be honest with you, I could not enjoy watching an MLS game. I mean, I think what's helped is that NBC Sports Network and NBC and Fox, for that matter, have started showing a lot of English Premier League soccer and also Serie A over in Italy. And that's the very high level. That's essentially the Major League Baseball, the NFL of soccer. And you're watching high-level sport. That's a high-level professional soccer. You watch MLS here in the States, and it's like watching a AAA game. At least that's the impression. I can't sit through an MLS game. I just can't. But I can handle an EPL game. And I'm finding this is the same thing. More than anything else, I guess, Greg, is that I've had the opportunity to watch game after game after game. and I'm starting to appreciate some of the nuances of the game. I'll never be an expert. You know, I'll never know the rules or the players the way I do in baseball and football, American baseball, American football. But at the very least, I gotta say, when the U.S. took a 2-1 lead today, I yelled at the top of my lungs. And, like I would when Miguel Cabrera hit that double in the 10th inning the other night. So, that tells me a lot right there. That told me right there I was getting into it when I yelled. I did the same thing when I was watching Germany and Ghana because, to be honest with you, that was an exciting, exciting game. It ended in a 2-2 tie. But I thought it was a very exciting game, even though it was, actually 2-2 in soccer is high scoring. So, I'll put it this way. I think it's just I enjoy watching high-level sport, and I've had the ability to watch several games in a row, and in some of it's starting to click for me. I think that's the difference.
I think what also is turning me on, and that's very well said, by the way, and I tip my hat to people who I feel a little – you know, jealous, and maybe I'll try it again, you know, and try to get some of the nuances. And I think some of what's turned me off, too, about soccer, Al, frankly, are the fans. Some of the unruliness of the fans throughout the world have really turned me off, which is not soccer's fault, of course, and it's not the player's fault.
Right.
But these incidents of violence? Mayhem. The hooliganism and all that other stuff that goes that whether fit or not gets attached to soccer, mm-hmm. kind of has turned me off as well because it reflected poorly on the game. I don't know why it shouldn't, but I subconsciously use that as a reason to further not want to get into it because I didn't like the people who were into it. The people who were into it, they had to like morons.
I agree with you there because there's lots of incidents. In European soccer, where fans will throw bananas at black players, for example, crap like
that. Refs have been killed.
Yes,
refs have been killed.
Yeah,
I mean they've beheaded referees.
The example of that is the I don't know if you've seen the 30 for 30 documentary called The Two Escobars about the Colombian soccer team in
the
90s, where one of the players was killed for scoring an own goal in the World Cup.
Yes.
So you got a point there that the soccer can get very, very ugly. You're very right about that.
Yeah, there's an attachment to that ugliness that makes me uneasy about the sport. It's almost like I feel a little dirty watching it, knowing that it's attached to that kind of behavior. But I think it's great that people like you who are not traditional soccer fans are embracing the sport. It'll never, of course. Ascend anything really in the United States anyway. I mean, I think we're pretty much that train has left the station, but there is still a niche that I know likes it. They've tried soccer, various soccer leagues throughout this country, both indoor and outdoor, and it just has not really ever, really taken. By the time Pele came here with the Cosmos and back in the late 70s, he was over the hill. He was old. He was over the hill, but he was still a big draw because he was probably still to this day one of the most recognizable athletes in the world.
Oh, hey, remember we're old enough to remember Trevor Francis and the
little
hysteria that we had soccer. What was it? Maybe early 80s with what was it? The Detroit
Express.
Detroit Express. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would have been the what league? What NASL?
NASL, yeah. Yeah, they played in the Silverdome.
Right.
There's also a guy in Detroit that later on, who's that guy who played for one of the Detroit teams? The indoor. I think it was an indoor team with the bald head. He had a one-word name.
Yeah.
Bald head.
I went to a handful of those games because they used to give out tickets for free like they used to for arena football. And it was kind of entertaining, but it's really a bastardized
form. Oh, of course it was. Of course it was.
Yeah, Americanized, maybe a better way to put it.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I'll just say this, though. If things continue the way they are, Clint Dempsey, the captain of the America of the U.S. Men's team, is going to become a folk hero over what he's done in the World Cup so far. Two games, two goals. And it looked like he had a game winner today. I mean, I got to say, it felt like a gut punch when they gave up that goal to Portugal with less than 30 seconds left in the game. And it's rare over a sport I really don't pay that close to, haven't paid that much attention to in the past, where it felt like, crap, god damn, it was awful.
Tell me, Allie, in soccer, can you pull the goalie for a 12th attacker?
Actually, the goalie becomes the 12th attacker. That's what will happen. And I've actually seen that a couple times where all of a sudden you see the goalie on the other side of the field as the other attacker. You know, with a little clown-looking gloves or whatever. So,
right,
let's wrap this up, Greg. So, because I know it's getting late, we got stuff to do. So, I think it's time for Jerk of the Week. So, who's your jerk?
Well, very, very, very low-hanging fruit. I'm kind of cheating here. I kind of almost feel bad doing this, but Keith Law.
Yeah.
I mean, Keith Law trying to using the word psychopath in a tweet in reference to Brett Ausmus, and then denying that he made a parallel between Ausmus and a psychopath is just really the height of arrogance, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, either this guy thinks we're the stupidest people in the world, or he just thinks he's being really clever by cheekily, denying it. I just think he's a jerk. Some of his reasoning and logic for some of the stuff he writes is just beyond me. Anyway, not just the stuff in general. And so I'm just going to give it to Keith Law. It's not a big reach on my part, but there it is.
Yep. My jerk of the week are going to people who are making fun of Padres reliever Alex Torres, because he's become the first major league pitcher to wear the protective cap. And reason for is that, to be honest with you, the protective cap looks kind of silly because it's very, very oversized. It's the old Great Gazoo head kind of thing. You know, and the thing
Mark
is, there's a segment of fans are saying, oh, look stupid, you look ridiculous, you're a pussy, blah, blah, be a man, you know. And the thing is, you got to give this guy credit. He had a scare in spring training where he was almost hit in the head by a line drive. He said, I want to take the next step to protect myself. And this is where baseball is going. This is where sports is going. It's going into head protection because of the issues of concussions. And I give this guy all the credit in the world. One, because he's gutty because he ordered this thing and realized it looks kind of silly. And obviously the technology is going to get better. It won't always look like this.
Right.
But for people to make fun of him, for being proactive over protecting themselves, how would you like to stand in front of Miguel Cabrera and have that bat ball come right straight back at you, and you have no protection at all? Any one of us would probably run in the other direction, and that tells you a lot about the guts that Major League Baseball players have. And the fact that Torres is doing this, I think it's awesome. So anybody who rags on him for this, I just think that they're just being assholes, to be honest with you.
You know, as you're talking about that, I couldn't help but think about when Jacques Plante skated on the ice in Montreal back in the mid to late 50s, the first time with a very crude form of a face mask.
That's
a very crude,
not at all what
a face mask would eventually look like, of course. But he came out with this, which he, by the way, told Blake, he said, I'm not going out there unless you let me wear this mask. He had been practicing with this mask in practice. Told Blake didn't like it, the coach, but let him wear it during practice. The feeling was that you can't see the puck as well, blah, blah, blah. Well, finally, Plante took one of the face, and he said, look, I'm not going back out there unless you let me wear this mask. Now, back then, teams had like one goalie. And you had a reserve guy in the stands.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, Lefty Wolf. And that was it. So Todd Blake really had no choice but to let Jacques Plante wear this mask. So Jacques Plante wears this mask now, and he gets cheered. For the first several times he wears this mask around the NHL, he gets cheered in the same fashion you're talking about. Oh, who knows what they were saying, but they were basically making fun of him and suggesting he was less than a man or whatever because he's got this mask on. Well, of course, everybody eventually wore a mask. It took a while, but, you know, most goalies started to do it, and then everybody was doing it by the 70s. So, you know, that's the same thing. I mean, would you even think of an NHL goalie right now stepping onto the ice barefaced? Of course not.
Yeah, you'd
of
laugh
course
at
not.
Them. What, you nuts?
Or you'd lie. You'd laugh at them for not wearing a mask.
Yeah.
Well, now, so I like in that situation. Now, of course, now you have base coaches who are wearing helmets now because of what happened to that poor guy, Coolball, when he got killed. In a minor league game, he was a third base coach, got killed because he was hit in the head with a batted ball, foul ball. Well, then after that, all base coaches in professional baseball were instructed that they would have to wear a helmet, which people had to get used to that for a while, too. But so I liken this whole thing with the oversized baseball cap as being the same thing. You made a good point. You're sure that, you know, you're probably right, that eventually they're going to make it look a little less auspicious and a little bit more whatever. And even, who cares? Even if they don't.
Yeah.
And even with this prototype that we see now, if that is indeed what this thing ends up looking like, so what?
Yeah,
it's amazing that in the history of baseball, in Major League Baseball anyway, there hasn't been one fatality, thank God,
yeah,
as a result of a batted ball being hit at a pitcher. Joe Coleman, I remember when his first year with the Tigers in spring training, had a stretch of the skull.
Yeah.
With the line drive hit right back at him. It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
Sheedy thinks.
Ardolis Chapman, same.
Right. Yeah. Scherzer in Sunday's game. He didn't get hit in the head, but he got hit in the knee.
Yeah.
And that could have. I was at a game, by the way, in 76 when Ron LaFleur hit a ball back at Wilbur Wood that shattered Wilbur Wood's kneecap. And I remember him flopping around on the ground like a fish out of water. It was one of the most disturbing things I'd ever seen in my life in any sport. You know, so it's amazing to me that there hasn't been more, frankly. And it's almost like that's what it's going to have to take for some of these morons to get on board with this, is it's going to take somebody getting killed or almost killed for them to finally, okay, yeah, maybe that's a good idea to wear a goofy hat.
Yeah, you know, in 20 years from now, when maybe they've had kids wearing same sorts of things and that's what they've grown up as they go on playing baseball and come up to the majors, it's kind of like wearing helmets in the NHL. I mean, as you mentioned in the match, it was the same with the helmets. Is that
right.
At first, you know, people were made fun of wearing helmets, and then it was making fun of wearing a visor. And now, standard, it's de rigueur.
Right.
Exactly. All right, Greg, let's wrap this up. So where can the listeners find you online?
Okay, GregEno.com, of course. Follow me on Twitter at GregEno. Follow the Knee-Jerks on Twitter at The Knee-Jerks. Our Facebook fan page is facebook.com/TheKnee-Jerks. And our blog is TheKnee-Jerks.us. Also, read me at BloodsyBoys.com every Monday morning with Monday Morning Manager. And I usually have another piece later on in the week, so read me there. I want to thank Travis Bader for his time, his very busy schedule. He took time out of his very busy schedule to talk with us, and that was really cool. And we wish him the best on Thursday night of the NBA draft. And if he's not drafted, we certainly wish him the best going forward in terms of his aspirations to play in the NBA. July 21st, we will be discussing EMU football with head coach Chris Creighton, who will be with us to talk about that program and what he intends to do to try to turn the fortunes around in Ypsilanti. Adam Biggers will be with us in a couple of weeks. You can also check us out. Well, I'll tell you how to get the podcast very easily. You can get it. I want to thank my lovely wife, Sharon, and thank you, Big Al, for making Monday Night Special.
All right. As always, you can find me pretty much every day at blessyourvoice.com, either recapping games or covering the news of the day. As always, you can find me on Twitter, at Big Al BYB, and I'm often running the Bless You Boys Twitter, which is at Bless You Boys. So that gets kind of spread out between some of the editors, and I spent the last couple of days actually running that. And, of course, to get this podcast, make sure you look for the Blog Talk Radio feed. Same goes for the Bless You Boys podcast, which I also do. And the best place to find those, just go to iTunes and search for our podcast, either one, Bless You Boys or The Knee Jerks. Make sure it's the Blog Talk Radio feed, and you can subscribe via iTunes. I always say that's the best way to go. All right, let's wrap this puppy up. So, until this time next week, maybe we'll be talking some more soccer, maybe not. This is Al Beaton saying good night, good afternoon, aloha, and all that.
Charlie, we'll talk to you next week. Good night.